Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Gary Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into tonight's edition of Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm your host, Ryan Porth. Tonight's guest will be Terrence Arthur Crisp. You know him as Crispy from the Predators television broadcasts. He will be joining me here in a few minutes. We'll go over a lot of things. His story about how he became the full-time analyst on the Predators broadcasts. If you have not heard that story, you will want to stay tuned for that. Also, we'll get into the 2004 playoff series between the Predators and the Red Wings, as well as his first memories of Shea Weber and Pecorine, and where things may have gone wrong for head coach Peter Laviolette as the Predators head coach, who was fired back in early January this calendar year. Before we get to Terry Crisp, I do want to remind you of the Instant Classics that we have coming up here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday this week, you will be able to hear the series clinchers from the 2017 postseason. Tuesday night at 6 p.m., the first round, Game 4 against Chicago when the Preds swept the Blackhawks. Wednesday at 6 p.m., Game 6 against the St. Louis Blues when the Preds clinched their first ever trip to the Western Conference Final. And then Thursday, Game 6 against the Anaheim Ducks of the Western Conference Final in 2017. Heard a lot of that here recently and brought back a lot of great memories. And man, it made me wish I could inject that atmosphere into my veins. Just really cool stuff. You'll be wanting to hear that Thursday at 6. And then this Saturday, from 1 to 4 p.m. for the first time on our airwaves, we will have condensed versions of games 3 and 4 against the Detroit Red Wings back in 2004. That's right, Pete and Terry on the call back in 2004, the first two home playoff games in franchise history. That will be a lot of fun this coming Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., condensed versions of those two games, games 3 and 4 against the Red Wings back in 2004. We welcome in Terry Crisp, Predators analyst that you see on the Fox Sports Tennessee broadcast, the legendary Terrence Arthur Crisp, the mayor of Smashville. Crispy, how's life treating you nowadays?
You know what, Porthy? I'm like everybody else. My wife, Sheila, and I were hunkered in. We're hoping for the best, praying for the best. I got to tell you one thing. My wife has never been so inventive as to inventing new recipes with nothing in the cupboard. I got to give her full marks. And my buddy Jack, he's always keeping me company, so we're doing okay. But like everybody else, we're praying hard to see an end to this virus that's going through.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, great message. And also, your buddy Jack, there's a lot of buddies named Jack going around the state of Tennessee.
Yeah, you got Jack. I got Jack, and then I got Jim. He's in the other cupboard. And I got Captain Morgan knocking on my garage door.
There you go. Well, a lot of people know that that you started with the Nashville Predators broadcast team back on day one, but some people may not know the story of how it was only supposed to be day one. What was kind of the story of you getting that job to do the first game with Pete Weber and how you just kind of stuck with it?
You know what? It's sort of intertwined with Pete Weber and myself. And the main cog in all of this was Jerry Helper, who is still with our organization. He came here the first year that they're all putting it together, getting ready for the draft and getting the rink ready and offices and all of that stuff. And Jerry Helper and I had worked together in Tampa Bay when I was the head coach there for 7 years, had become close friends, and he helped me through a lot of things and a lot of the business end of it down there when I was there. When he came here, they're looking, they had the radio, Mike Green in place for color, but nobody for TV yet. And he called me up and asked me if I wanted to do it. I said, no, I'm done. I said, we're going to retire in Florida, enjoy it. And, well, he said, no, we just need you for the first game. We just need you for help for the first game. And I want you to work up and work with Pete Weber. I says, just one game. He says, well, yeah, you owe me. I said, you're calling in your note. He says, yeah. I said, okay. I'll do that, and we're even. Came up, introduced myself to Pete Weber, sat down beside him, had a great night, a great lot of fun with it. Stood up, shook hands, said thank you very much, away I went back home. A couple days later, I get another phone call from Jerry Helper. Crispy, listen, we've got a doubleheader. I said, Jerry, no. He says, I've got a doubleheader. We're going to have somebody come up. And I said, so then you'll owe me. He says, yeah. I said, okay. So I came up, did a couple of games with Pete again. And it was by about that time, Sheila was ready, like I said, had enough of me underfoot because you get bored in the house and whatnot. And it was sort of fun. So Mr. Diller, the president, said, listen, Chris, we'd like you and Pete to work together doing the TV games. You can commute. You and Sheila can wheel flyers up and put you in a hotel, and you can tour around Nash when he's here and just a TV game. And I said, you know what? We're bored. It sounds like fun. So we did it. So that's how the first year evolved. I came back and back and forth, did the games. And at the end of the season, I thanked them all, said it was great fun, and said we're heading out. And Mr. Diller said, well, we'd like you and Pete as a combo. We'd like you to stay there. And I said, no. I said, no. He said, you can commute if you want. So being a smart ass, I says, tell you what, Jack, you give me a 3-year contract, we'll sell our house in Florida and move to Nashville. He says, okay. Uh-oh. Just like that, uh-oh. So I'm on the phone saying to my wife, Sheila, hon, sell the house. And what do you mean? Well, we're moving to Nashville. So she says, okay. So we sold the house, moved up, and the rest is history, and one of the best moves we've made.
That's such a great story. So, and you've become such great friends too with Pete Weber. You guys are almost intertwined. Whenever one talks about Pete, the other talks about Crispy.
You know what? It was just sort of a union that was made. Like I said to people, I've said, how lucky could I be to sit down beside a gentleman like Pete, who's the consummate pro, been in the game in every sport there is. He's got a photographic memory, so that I just have to start a sentence, and he finishes and gets the right answer for me. And he's got a sense of humor that rivals, and he never gets in the way of having fun, the ego. So it was just sort of, we had fun with it. And from then on, it just sort of went along. And the more we worked together, the more fun we had.
Do you have enough fingers and hands to count the amount of times that you guys have watched Blazing Saddles together over the years?
Well, I'm not sure, but Blazing Saddles, Slapshot.
Yes.
the other one, the Animal House.
Oh, man.
You take your pick on them, and Pete knows every word at the script of all three movies, especially Blazing Saddles, and he's pretty close on Slapshot.
What about Animal House?
Well, he's good at it, but it'll be third on the list.
So if you had to be quarantined to just one movie, if you could only watch one movie during this quarantine period, which movie would you pick?
Of those three?
Or of any movie.
Of any movie. Let me see. I'm trying to think of which. I've had so many John Wayne movies way back in the black and white days on those ones. Probably the one that I laugh the most because of my twisted sense of humor and my background in hockey would be Slapshot.
Okay. That's fair. I would have to go maybe a little bit more modern with hockey,
right,
and go Miracle.
Yeah, you guys are all in that one. But the Slapshot to me is the old days of minor hockey and how close to the truth it was. It's scary.
So back when you were coaching with the Flames and with the Tampa Bay Lightning, did you ever envision yourself working in broadcasting?
You know what? I didn't really – no, I didn't count on it, but it sort of seemed to be a natural because I always enjoyed doing interviews. I always enjoyed talking with the press because one thing, they could make you, break you, or bury you, or put you up on top. And you learn in a hurry with them that you don't win the fight. So when I was a player and a head coach, I said, this is sort of neat talking with them. And then when I got a chance, while I was doing my coaching career, to work when we didn't make playoffs and whatnot, to work with TSN up in Toronto, I started to enjoy it. And after that, it was just sort of, I look back now, a natural progression. There's nothing in the world beats being an athlete. of any sport, of any competition. You're in the pit. You're in the fire. You're with it as the athlete performing. The second best thing is a coach. You're still in the action. You're still on the bench. You're still out in the fields, et cetera. You're in all the meetings. You're controlling. And then after that, the natural progression would be TV. You played, you coached, and then they just dump you into a TV chair, and away you go. Hmm. So for me, it was sort of just that progression.
How would you kind of describe the difference between the coach/media individual relationship back then compared to what it is now?
Probably now the coaches are more aware of there wasn't as much exposure when mm-hmm. I started coaching. I mean, you had the odd TV guy would be there. You had your beat writer that was there. And back when you first started, you only had one beat writer, whether it would be a lady or a guy. They traveled with you, but you trusted them, and you knew how much you could go with them, how much you would allow them in your dressing room and your meetings, into your private conversations. And they never stabbed you in the back with it. You always said, this is off the record. Now, you and I both chuckle at that now when you use that phrase, off the record. Give me a break.
Nothing's off the record.
Exactly. I mean, it's so competitive now. I mean, you have everything going in this era, and the players and the coaches have got to be on their toes every minute, every second. You have no idea what pen in a guy's pocket is a camera or is a recorder mm-hmm. or whatever. I remember way back one day, this was the biggest thing ever, was that when they used to bring them into your office, and you'd sit and have maybe a cold beer with them and chat about your team and that, and you'd give them what you wanted, and they never ever violated that. It was, and then they put it in the paper what you said. I think now the guys got to be on their toes a whole lot more.
Crispy, this Saturday we're going to be re-airing for the first time the 2004 games 3 and 4. Of the first round playoff series against the Detroit Red Wings. Obviously the first ever playoff appearance for the Nashville Predators. What do you remember about that playoff series for the Preds?
Probably the biggest thing is that how important it was to our franchise to make it, to get in there. That's your achievement, is when you're new, when you're young, you're building for it, but you got to get into the playoffs, and you can't let it go too long or the fans start to say, well, we're going to rebuild every year. Is it going to be another year where you give us all these promises that we're going to make it and it doesn't happen? When you do finally solidify that, when you do get into the playoffs, it's the most fun. This is when your fans get to get a peek at it, to get a look at the real playoff hockey, what happens, how it revs up, how it ramps up, the excitement, the pressure, the whole ball of wax that goes with it. And to me, that's what I remember most about that first year against playoffs against Detroit.
I also think for especially the newer fan that may not have jumped on board until the last, I don't know, 5-10 years, I don't think those individuals truly understand the job that Barry Trotz did to get that team to the playoffs when you compare what that team was on paper versus the teams that the Preds have now.
No, you know what? It was amazing. Trotz, he never got the full marks. He was respected, and we all knew he did a good job, but with the team that he had, and I think where Trotsky was a master, no, I know where Trotsky was a master at, handling his players individually and collectively. And he knew when to hammer down, when to ease up, when to make it go. And I look at the teams now that the coaches have, and here is an example because I've been here all along, that everybody said that Trotsky played, it was defensive hockey. It was boring sometimes. It wasn't exciting on the attack. Well, Trotsky knew exactly what horses he had, and he knew what his stable was like. And I've always said this, and you've heard me say this many, many times. You put me up in the back of Secretariat or Seabiscuit or one of them guys, and I'm going to make you money. I'm going to end up in the top three every time and make money. You put me on a plow horse, and I'm still out in the friggin' fields, plowing corn or whatever when the race is over. And Trotsky knew that he had to play a special type, and he did. And it was successful. We made the playoffs, and we won those 2-1 games and those 3-2 games late in the game because he took his team, knew what he had, and worked perfectly with them.
It's still borderline amazing to me thinking that he never won a Jack Adams while being the coach here in Nashville.
Yeah, I know, and that's always for the best coach that took the team with it, and you're right. That was very overlooked, and we, Pete Weber and I, and the main sports guys that we had here, David Beauclair and John Glennon and a few of them, we'd always beat the drums. We'd start our attack early. But then again, we were a new team. We were new kids in the block with our team and with the press. And we didn't have the power that the Eastern guys, the voting blocks, had.
Mention the 2004 playoff series against Detroit. People may not realize that that was the first rivalry that the Predators had, was with the Detroit Red Wings. What do you miss most about that rivalry ever since Detroit went from the West to the East?
Probably the thing is that our fans loved it. And our fans, that was their first real love-hate relationship, was with Detroit, because we all knew, at that given time, Detroit was the team in our division. And you knew that if you're going to get anywhere in the playoffs, you had to eventually go through Detroit. It was like when we were out West, everybody knew if you're going to go anywhere, you had to get by the Edmonton Oilers during their reign and their swashbuckling days. So every time we played Detroit, that was our yardstick. That was our meter. And Trotsky knew it, and the team knew it, and we all knew it, that if we could go head-to-head with Detroit, then we were making ground. We were getting better. And that was, you know, our litmus test every time. We finally broke through and met them, of all the teams in the playoffs, and we did that one. That was probably one of our most exciting times in our early formative years of our franchise.
Do you think there's a yardstick team in modern-day NHL, or is it so fluid that with the salary cap world that there isn't a yardstick team?
No, I like the word you just used. It's fluid. You never know. Like, I mean, I was looking at teams this year and last year. And last year you knew, we felt, that the Avalanche were going to get tougher, that Phoenix is going to get tougher, was going to be mean. Dallas, the same way. St. Louis, the same way. And our hockey club and our division. So we knew that that was happening, that you couldn't just say, well, if we beat this team, we're in. No, no, no. You beat this team, there's one other team just as mean, just as big, and just as solid waiting down the line to get at you. I can remember when I was coaching Calgary, and we won the cup that year, and for some reason we were playing Chicago in the Western Finals. And I don't know why, Porthy, I say this, but we, when the game that we beat them out and we were going to the Stanley Cup Finals, in my own mind, and of course didn't say it out loud, I can say it now that, you know, hindsight's 20/20. When that final buzzer went against Chicago, in my heart and mind, I thought, you know what? We just won the Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. But you sure don't say it out loud. And you sure as heck don't let anybody else hear it.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something in your mind that knows that you, when you got by the one team, you were in.
So thinking along the lines of memory lane, ever since 2004, there have been a handful of stars come through this market, and one is Shea Weber. What's your first memory of Shea Weber?
Probably just a great big solid pillar, that you looked at him and he was granite out there. No matter what, he was a solid piece of granite that could shoot a piece of granite harder than anybody else in the league. But I always loved Shea Weber because he was not unassuming, but just that quiet, you know, one of those movie stars like Burt Lancaster or John Wayne or one of them, when you looked at him, you said, oh, yeah, this guy means business and he knows what's going to happen. Mm. And that, to me, was Shea Weber. Quiet, led to the way he had to, close the door when he had to the dressing room to talk to them. And I always thought that that was one of the stalwarts. You know, you can go through Tom Fitzgerald, the same style that he was, Greg Johnson, we had him. But Shea Weber, and I laughed when, God bless, Wade Belak one time. He was a tough kid when he played, and God bless him. He was asked one time who would be the one guy he did not ever want to have to fight in the league, in the league. And he was playing with us at that time. And he looked over, he said, that guy right there, Shea Weber.
So I know with a lot of players, people say, oh, well, I knew right when I saw him, right when I saw him play, he was going to be something special. When did you know Shea Weber was going to be something special?
Probably partially into the second year when he started to realize that the leadership qualities that he did have, the leadership qualities that this team was looking for, and he was one of the few that we had at that given time. And probably when you saw him be one of the first we had that would step up for his teammates. And when he stepped up and stepped in between one of the smaller teammates and the other guy and the other team that thought he was going to have an easy go-around with one of them, that's when you realize that Shea Weber not only knew his own game that he should be playing on the ice, but what his other duty as a leader was and as a captain. So that's when I said, you know what? He's arrived. He's come of age.
Along the same lines, what's your first memory of watching Pecorine play?
Pecorine, the first time I saw him play, he was sort of gangly and whatnot. And I thought, oh, boy, this kid is sort of like a loosey-goosey. But the biggest thing I remember early games of him was the glove hand he had. And I kept thinking to myself, of all my years of coaching and playing, I never saw goaltenders that like some were sprawlers, some were divers, some were up and down, some were angle goaltenders. Pekka used his glove more than any goalie I'd seen and was great at it. And I think that's the thing that sticks with me and ended up throughout his career. I still maintain Pecorine, when he's on his game, has one of the best gloves in the business that I've seen.
So kind of fast-forwarding to this season, obviously the Nashville Predators through 69 regular season games currently sit in a playoff position. We will see here in the coming days and weeks whether or not, or maybe months, whether or not there will be a conclusion to this season. But Crispy, the biggest storyline of this season for the Nashville Predators was the fact that they changed coaches midway through. In your mind, where did things maybe go wrong under Peter Laviolette's direction that led to him being let go?
You know what? I've been fired enough times since I was a coach, too. I've been fired 3 times, so I know what happens and what goes down. But first off, I'm going to take a second and go back down memory lane and give total compliments and accolades to Coach Laviolette and his staff for what they did in the 3-4 years they were here, where they took the team, where they got them past the second round for the first time, I think, ever, mm-hmm.
Yep.
And went to the Stanley Cup Finals and took the team that they had and put it all together and made it happen. So they did their job when they were brought in and did it. And I'm thinking that, you know what, when you're going to make an omelet, you're going to break eggs. And when Peter Laviolette and I went through this, the same thing that he did in his, as he was going through it, I was thinking back to my career, you're going to step on toes. You're going to kick players off that think they're better than they are and think they should have more ice time than they deserve. But the bottom line that Laviolette realized, and I did, that it was his job to win. And no matter what it took to win, that's what he wanted, the players wanted, and the fans certainly wanted and needed. And that's what he did. And sometimes as a coach, you pay a price for that down the road. And I know I paid it, and Peter paid the price, and so much as that, if you step on certain toes in that dressing room and those certain toes have power and there's enough and you, what you have to do in order to do it, it comes back to bite you. And I still give full marks to Peter and his crew and them for what they did while they're here. But it's almost in your heart. I think Peter felt the same as I did, that you knew that was coming. You knew that it was aimed at you. And you knew that there was no way you were going to dodge it.
What was the biggest difference that you saw in the team between Peter Laviolette and then John Hines, you know, through the 28 games of a sample size that we saw before the pause?
You know what? Not a whole lot, except that I appreciate the fact that when Coach Hines came in, it was a tough spot. I mean, when he came in here, it was just overnight almost, and he knew that he was brought in for a particular reason. And that particular reason was to make it a better team or to get them back on their wheels, on their beams, how they could play. And he made no bones about it. And I like the way that he walked in here and went to the press and told them in no uncertain terms what he expected, his style, his players. And he didn't hesitate. Hey, I mean, he sat the big boys one night, which you've had to do a lot of times. And that's risky. And that's dangerous. But he did it. But the one thing that was really amplified was the fact that we had to play better defensively in the defensive zone. And it took a few games, a couple of weeks to get that message through. But once it got through, and Coach Hines and his staff got it through to them, we started playing hockey we knew we were capable of.
Do you feel like it's going to be maybe a little unfair to judge certain players on this Preds team or John Hines himself until there's a full training camp before going into a full season?
Yeah. Yeah, John Hines, specifically the coach, yes, they deserve time. Players, I'm not so easy on them. I'm not so forgiving on them. These guys have been here a long time in our league. A lot of them have been a long time in the NHL. And to me, if you had that kind of a stature, that kind of longevity in the NHL, for the way that some of them have produced or have not produced, does not fall on the coaching staff. It calls on that big mirror I keep telling you that should be put right outside the room when they walk out of it to look into. So I'm going to be interested in seeing how some of the players do answer this coaching change.
Terrence Arthur Crisp, you know him as Crispy, as the TV analyst for the Nashville Predators. Crispy, so good to hear your voice. Hopefully you're staying healthy and washing your hands and, you know, doing your part and staying apart throughout this quarantine. And hopefully all of us can do that and get back to watching hockey sooner rather than later.
Well, thanks for having me on so much. Always a treat. And I want to just echo what you said. Yes, Sheila and I are hunkered down like everybody else and just do your part to stay apart. But again, all of our thoughts and blessings and prayers are with everybody out there. Hang together, look after your families, and we will get through this together. God bless. Take care.
Well said, Crispy, and we will see you at the rink, hopefully, again, sooner rather than later.
You got it, Boise. Take care, man. You stay healthy, too.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and thegamenashville.com. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and wherever you get your podcast, rate, review, subscribe. When you subscribe, you will get the newest edition of Preds Insiders downloaded right to your phone. Thanks to Terry Crisp for joining us here on Preds Insiders. Until next time, I'm Ryan Porth. Stay safe, Nashville. We'll talk to you soon. ESPN 102.5 The Game.